Welcome to the Engagement Fit Drive podcast. We're so happy to have you join us. And together with Tracy, Andrew, and Claire, let's make bringing your drives to life practical and fun. In our drives and action episodes, we'll share stories of drives at play in everyday scenarios so you can relate and gain deeper understanding of your drives. In our Driving Impact episodes, we'll sit down with incredible guests who are using the Drive framework and tools to create meaningful impact, both professionally and personally. Whether you're here to better understand yourself, your team, or simply curious about living a thriving and inspired life, you're in the right place. So let's dive in.
Welcome to our series on how drives influence communication. This is part 2A, where we dive deep into the thinking domain, the space where ideas are formed, connected, and made sense of. Andrew and I will explore four powerful drives that live here: the contemplator, the innovator, the integrator, and the moderator. We'll unpack how each one communicates, processes information, and influences the way teams think, decide, and move forward. So let's get into it and see how thinking energy becomes communication energy.
Our first drive is contemplator. And this drive's influence on communication will tend to be reserved, measured, reflective, and thoughtful. They will tend to pause before responding, often weighing implications carefully, and they tend to only communicate when ideas are fully formed. They're best understood when others allow silence, patience, and space for reflection. Their words are valued for depth rather than speed. Potential blind spots and misunderstandings. They can be mistaken for disengagement, indecision, or aloofness. And they may tend to frustrate fast-paced or energetic communicators who want quick feedback.
The contemplator is seen to be disengaged and a bit indecisive, or as Andrew mentioned, you see a bit of aloofness. And this is really because this is a very deep thinking drive, a very deep way of thinking, non-linear. Contemplators have a lot of thoughts in their head. It all makes sense. They process what they're thinking in their heads. And therefore, that takes time because you can just imagine the different angles. And I'm a visionary, a picture person, so I can just see in their brains all this going on, linking and all the thoughts buzzing and joining. It must be amazing to have this way of thinking because it all makes sense in their head. Sometimes they will even have conversations in their head. They will look at someone and want an answer from them. And in the meantime, they haven't actually even verbalized. They've had the conversation in their head. And they live in their head. So that's why they don't always seem to be present. So there's definitely this non-linear versus linear thinking. They definitely think on a different scale at a much different level. Even communicating what is going on in their head is difficult for them because they process in their head. When they now try and verbalize that or articulating what they think, that can be challenging for them.
Yes.
Andrew, how do you feel?
Because on the point of nonlinear thinking is that it's this decoding nonlinear thinking into the linear process of communication. And it's a good idea to also consider how your other drives influence contemplate if it's a dominant drive for you, and also to consider booster drives, like how to what degree sniper and contemplator, although sniper is an executing drive, that narrowing the focus and that contemplator's tendency to be in their heads means that they might be there in person, but there will be so much in their heads that the world around them seems to fade away. And other people may perceive that you disengaged or that you aloof. And sometimes maybe just touching them on the shoulder so that they realize that although they're there in person, they may come across as not being engaged in the conversation around them.
When we talk about that, you can be on a need-to-know basis with a contemplator.
Yes.
And that the reason for that is because there's so much clarity in their head and they are only seeing it through their lens. And they don't like to be put on the spot because unless they've already had time to think about an answer or feedback that they're giving, but they do need time because it's that time to go and really reflect, really go and think on another level. So they do need to ask for time. Time is the essence for the contemplator because it energizes you, making time to think. And it's quite difficult for people that have a few dominant accomplishing drives. I always try and encourage them that don't underestimate the power of actually just being and thinking if you've got a dominant contemplator drive, because your expertise, your knowledge, your input can come from that time.
Also remembering that if you are in a meeting setting with other people, you will be thinking about what's being discussed. And to Tracy's point of being put on the spot for immediate feedback, respect the fact that you haven't had time yet to process all these things. And so just communicating to others, just give me a few hours or give me the day or give me the night and I will share my insights with you as a very good practice so that when you come back and you share those insights, they can add value to the people in the meeting. The innovator drive. And I feel it's important to just clarify as well with contemplator, which we've just covered, and with innovator. Contemplators are energized by the process of deep thinking, and innovators are energized by the process of ideating. So the innovator drive, this drive's influence on communication will tend to be experimental and creative, energetic, a tendency to disrupt the status quo, possibility focused. They generate fresh perspectives and challenge assumptions. They love brainstorming and challenging the norms. They're best understood when their raw ideas are treated as sparks for exploration, not final answers. And when others stay open to experimentation, blind spots and potential misunderstandings, they can appear impractical, scattered, or dismissive of tradition. They may overwhelm drives that prefer structure, predictability, and tried and tested ways.
I think the big communication curve for the innovator is because, and I'm a dominant innovator, we so, like Andrew said, enjoy the idea of coming up with new ways of doing things. We love experimenting. Everything that crosses my desk, for example, I want to make better, I want to change it, I want to add things to it. And it can be quite a disruptive drive if it's not well managed, especially if you are in a team where there is a lot of structure and they don't like change. And if things are working, why do we need to change them? So that's one thing that innovators' communication has to be aware of, or the way they communicate is, why is it that they feel it would be better to change it, do it better? What are the outcomes? How will it enhance? How will it elevate whatever it is that it's going to do? But I think even before that, I think the communication almost needs to be addressing what something is like now with the people that are involved and see whether they are open to new ideas or What about timing? Is it a time now to actually change things or better things or do it differently? I think they really need to be cognitive of, because these ideas flow and come so naturally to them and they want to do it.
Tracy mentioned that drives that prefer structure or predictability or tried and tested ways, the reason why there might be resistance to disrupting the status quo is it could be timing. You know, if you decide to roll out a brand new program at year end, that'll cause chaos because you don't know unless you're doing that on a testing system. But even if you launch a new system live for the very first time, there are going to be issues and problems. And this is something where changing something that works, that's tried and tested, might cause resistance because it might mess with their workflows or their deadlines or their pressure points. So that's definitely one thing. The second thing is the first stage of design thinking is empathy. And the first stage of design thinking process is user-centric research. You want to gain an empathetic understanding of the problem you're trying to solve. And because innovators have a tendency to want to start from a blank canvas, that's also something that potentially needs management, because there might be aspects of the existing system that are actually good, that are tried and tested and that bring value. But how do you make the system better? And when you approach solving a problem with empathy and deeply understanding the process and how it works, that's where innovators can be really effective in making something better and suggesting ideas that enhance the system rather than going back to the beginning.
Andrew, I really like that, the way you've articulated that, because I feel that innovators, when they are communicating with other drives that maybe, for example, the skeptic, which I know we're going to get to, but, you know, the skeptic will have an idea of why this actually wouldn't work. So I feel that an innovator communicating, because remember, the innovator is not only going to have one idea, they do have lots of ideas. So maybe that first idea needs a bit of work. The power of communicating with the team, with the people involved, I think is so powerful and so necessary, because an innovator will tend to innovate on their own, come up with all these creative ideas on their own, unless they're brainstorming with the team or with other innovators. But what I'm saying is innovators do this naturally. They're always thinking, how can it be better? It's not necessary that it's something that just comes up because there's a problem. They're always innovating.
It's worth mentioning, and again, with innovator, is what are your other dominant drives and how could they influence this? Consider, for example, an innovator, integrator, booster drive effect, and how that takes connecting the dots to other situations and the ability to ideate in ideas and solutions to the next level. Also, as we mentioned, innovator is energized by the process of ideating. So it's not necessarily because you've got the idea you're going to execute it. It's going to be shaped by the other drive energy that you have. So you might need to collaborate with somebody in terms of getting your ideas implemented and executed. Right, we're going to move on to the next drive now, which is integrator. This drive's influence on communication will tend to be holistic, systems level, and big picture. They communicate by weaving connections, showing how pieces fit together, and emphasizing interdependence. Their language often bridges themes, patterns, and relationships rather than isolated details. They are best understood when others listen for patterns and linkages in their communication. Their perspective is valued as connecting the dots rather than being too abstract. And they are allowed to frame conversations at a whole system level before narrowing down. potential blind spots and misunderstandings is that it can be perceived as being vague, indecisive, overly accommodating, or lacking focus on the next step. Detail-oriented drives may dismiss their insights because they are based on intuition rather than facts, and because the patterns they see cannot be proved logically. They may also frustrate more direct or forceful communicators, for example, captains or skeptics.
It is challenging for integrators to communicate because of their gut insights, their intuition, what they can see. They are the bridge builders. They see things, they see the whole. They see the very big picture of how everything fits together. And for very detail-orientated drives, that is quite challenging because they can't connect up the dots. They have a more way of looking at things is more segmented as opposed to holistic. So it can be challenging for integrators. And my feeling with integrators and their level of communication is they also need to be aware of when do they need to communicate, when are they crossing the boundaries with things that they can see but maybe are not for them to be part of. And with that, I mean more of integrators that may have some of the sensing drives dominant, and they can see how people's lives are going and the mistakes that they're going to make or think how things are not going to work. So I feel they need to know where do they end and other people begin. And even though they can see what they can see, is to really ask permission, is would you like some guidance here?
That's a very valid point, Trace. And I think that's worth exploring a little bit deeper, is if you are drawing on the ability to sense of some of the drives and your intuition with this drive, not everybody sees or senses what you see. So the contribution that you can bring to others is huge. But to Tracy's point about respecting boundaries and asking permission to share that insight, and also just understanding that this, even when you explain it, they still may not see it.
Also feel, and now we'll bring the integrator back into the workplace, that the skills or the talents of this drive that have this ability is you must communicate what you can see. I feel if your organization is open to what you can see, you can add such great value because you can join all the dots. You can see how the systems are working or not working, or how they could work better, or how departments could work better. So I feel that go with your intuition and share it. It's up to the organization whether they take your insights or not, but you can really add valuable insight because of this level of thinking. Again, it's non-linear. It's off the charts, connecting things. It's not everybody can do this. And Andrew, I'm sure you as a dominant integrator could expand a lot more on that. And do you have any maybe examples in your life?
So Trace, if I have a dominant contrast between integrator and skeptic as dominant drives for me. And I love what that allows me to do. For starters, if I am approaching something and my skeptic drive is engaged, I will be listening for something that doesn't sound right, or something that I would say, but how do you know that? Where do you get that from? And the approach to making sense of that is a reductionist approach to break things into parts, analyze it, back it with facts and information. But what integrate allows me to do is to piece things together and to be able to consider the big picture. And if you consider aspects like intangible aspects like faith and love, how do you practically back that up with facts and information? There are so often links there that you've got a whole space for yourself. And I love that ability to do that, to think at a big picture level, to consider how all these things interconnect. But when you're dealing with somebody who's a dominant skeptic, they want to take the reductionist approach and break down those very things that connect what they see to the big picture. And that's where skeptics and integrators can miss each other.
You're very fortunate to have both of those drives, Andrew, and you're dominant.
It's a great asset and I really enjoy it. What I've learned, though, is in both of those drives, they can be misunderstood by others. And you need to back yourself in terms of what you see with integrator and what skeptic looks like when it shows up. We've been talking around this theme of consider your other dominant drives. And a very valid point was made that if you are making sense of and processing your thoughts and intuition as an articulator, remember, articulator makes sense of the world around them by talking things through. They need to verbally process to be able to think and to put things together. Be aware that others may be listening and you haven't finished clarifying your thoughts yet. As a person with a strong integrator drive and also articulator, it might be worth setting time aside with someone you trust who can help you clarify your insights in a private space so that when you share those insights, they can really add value and they will land because you've clarified exactly what you want to say.
I think that's very valid. I'd just like to encourage listeners, if you feel that you have got an integrator drive strong, integrators are very rarely wrong in what in their intuition. But that also means that you may have to spend some time on it, honing that again, because the world pushes us so far away from intuition. And I feel, use your gut and start listening to it, but also observing and seeing how many times your gut is right, because that's going to give you the confidence also to communicate what you think. There's a thinking drive. And we're all intuitive. If you think about, we all have that intuitive, we all have that sixth sense, but as time has gone on and the world has changed, we haven't had to be so intuitive. And I'll just give an example. When we were by the river, we were on high alert, listening for a lion coming out while we were collecting water. We don't do that anymore. We don't have to be so in touch with our surroundings and our intuition anymore. As integrators, you naturally have this. And it's just to own the drive and really learn to master it.
I think one final point on integrator that's worth mentioning, and especially around the communicated bit and how this drive influences communication, is that it's one of our time-related drives as well. And integrators see time as on a continuum from past to the future and everywhere in between. And this ability to connect the dots from a time referencing perspective also has a lot of value. Now, obviously, depending on your personality and who you are, and if you consistently share your insights in an environment where they're overlooked or disrespected, you will tend to stop sharing those insights. And downside of that and the detriment is other people will miss out on a very valuable contribution. That we're going to move on to the next drive now, which is moderator. This drive's influence on communication will tend to be neutral and process-focused, steady and fair-minded. Their approach to diffusing conflict is by hearing both sides of the story and then mediating the process so that a fair and agreeable solution is negotiated. They stabilize the environment by reducing friction, treating everyone fairly, ensuring that everyone is clear in what is expected of them, that they understand the rules, and that they follow procedures. They are best understood when the even tone is valued as having a stabilizing effect, when others allow them to slow heated discussions for fairness. potential blind spots and misunderstanding. They can be perceived as passive, disengaged, or avoiding strong stances. They may frustrate high energy or opinionated communicators who want quicker decisions. Moderators tend to have a strong need for harmony, efficiency, tried and tested methods that work when the pressure is on, and fair environments. So what you'll tend to find if there's conflict is they tend to want to engage where there's conflict and mediate win-win solutions in an effort to restore the status quo as quickly as possible.
You're saying, Andrew, they want to bring the stability. They want everything to come back to calm.
Yes. So moderators don't do chaos and high-pressure situations well. They certainly don't thrive in an environment like that. They can stabilize it, and they stabilize chaotic environments through making sure that everyone knows what's expected of them, finding a way of mediating win-win solutions, and making sure that everyone is treated fairly and that rules and procedures are followed. But they will not be the people who would want to enforce the rules. They tend to model what compliance looks like, but they're not the ones who are going to stand up and want to enforce rules and regulations. One thing's for sure about moderators is that it's black and white. The rules are there to be followed. So anyone who doesn't comply with rules or tends to flaunt rules or will generally cause a situation between a moderator and someone who does that.
Moderators see people as all the same. They don't really take into account that we individuals are unique. It's those are the rules. Everybody must obey the rules. They don't really look at extenuating circumstances. And coaching a moderator around this is quite challenging because their mindset keeps coming back to, but they've broken the rules. They've done wrong. And I have to say to them, I agree with you. There needs to be repercussions, consequences for the behavior. All I'm asking you to is look beyond the behavior. Why is the behavior happening? Because moderators tend to, it's a thinking drive. That's what their thoughts are about it. And they sort of cut it off at that point. You've broken the rules. That's it. Whereas I encourage them just to look beyond that is, why? What is actually happening with this individual that the behavior is coming up? Because there's something underlying. And again, I'm just saying, I'm not excusing the behavior, but let's look at the behavior. And just bringing a different perspective.
If you are a dominant moderator and you've got a dominant guardian drive, the booster effect of these two drives is to take the black and white thinking to the next level. Now, where typically moderators will deal with things in a clinical way, that clinical approach to handling conflict tends to become a lot more emotive when guardian gets engaged. When a person's beliefs, principles, or sense of justice and what they consider respectful is challenged, moderator-guardian combination shows up and the guardian tends to dominate and becomes far more emotive because it's around you challenging something that I live my life on. And therefore, I will defend it and nail my colors to the mast. And if you are a moderator-guardian, and it won't be on every situation, but if you are triggered because you feel that your principles, beliefs, sense of justice is being challenged, you will tend to want to defend it.
Thanks for joining us on this exciting journey of self-discovery and fulfillment. We hope you found inspiration, practical takeaways, and maybe a deeper understanding of how drives work in action. If you want to discover your drives, head over to engagementfit.com and take the drive assessment. If you love this episode, remember to hit the subscribe button. We'd also love to hear your thoughts, so leave us a review or share this episode with someone who's ready to unlock their drives and thrive. Until next time, keep driving towards a life of meaningful impact.